Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome. Well, National Geographic has declared today World Lion Day in response to the sad death of Cecil, a beloved Zimbabwean lion that you probably heard about. It's been plastered all over Facebook, all over the internet. He was killed at the hands of an American dentist. And in response to that, in honor of that, I guess, National Geographic Wild is airing a full day of big cat programming today. And to shed light on the decline of big cats worldwide and what we can do to help that, we'll be joined at 12:30 by big cat tracker Boone Smith. And later, if you're constantly feeling tired and can't seem to shift those extra pounds, health and fitness experts Dr. Jason Carlton and Mira Carlton will tell us why they're claiming that micronutrient deficiency is pandemic. We'll look at how fixing that deficiency can help us lose weight, gain energy, and reverse certain disease. And their new book is called The Micronutrient Miracle, The 28-Day Plan to Lose Weight, Increase Your Energy, and Reduce Disease. And Jason Carlton is a doctor of nutrition and actually helped cure his wife. So that's going to be an interesting story when we talk to them. We'll hear from them later. These are returning guests, if their name seems familiar. Last time they joined us, I think I got more calls about what is the name of their book from listeners than just about any other show we did. So we'll try to say that a few times throughout the show today in case you miss it, because I know people have to run in and out while they're listening to the radio. First, we're going to be talking about Parkinson's disease. We are trying to get hold of our guest. She was scheduled for 12. And if you remember last week, we were talking about the perils of live radio, and this is one of them, even though, you know, we do due diligence in making sure everybody's got schedules and phone numbers, etc. Can't control it if nobody's on the other end of the phone picking up. But we are hoping to connect with Dr. Fiona Gupta. She's a leading specialist in Parkinson's disease, and we're going to talk about that just as soon as we can get hold of her. And for regular listeners, you'll know that's something that's near and dear to my heart and my family's heart, because we dealt for it with 20 plus years with my mom. And I say the family dealt with it because it's not something that a Parkinson's sufferer has to deal with alone. It does affect the whole family. And I'm hoping today we can cut through some of the myth around Parkinson's disease. It's often known as the shaking disease, which is really off the wall, because what it actually does is make people very stiff. They get bradykinesia, which causes their body to freeze up. And when they're not on their meds, their gait is very awkward. It can be actually non-existent. I think back to times that I stayed with my mom, and in the middle of the night when her meds had worn off, she wasn't on them 24/7, but when the meds wore off at night, it was painful watching her just even try to reach across to her bedside tray to pick up a cup and take a sip of water. So we'll learn more about that today. And we're also going to look at a couple of really interesting studies that have just been released on Parkinson's disease. One of them addresses the fact of depression. We all heard about Robin Williams way back when he committed suicide, and there was speculation around, well, was he depressed because he had PD, or, you know, what was going on there? But this new study does say that does link depression to a higher risk for Parkinson's. I'm not going to quote on that until we manage to connect with a doctor, but I did look at some studies, and it's quite interesting to see what they found. The other interesting study that I think came out was that sleeping on your side may reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. So I didn't look too deep into that one. We're going to have a deeper look again, as I said, when we get Dr. Gupta. team at Stony Brook University conducted that one, and they said that it actually played a role in decreasing the chances of developing neurological diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And the interesting thing, of course, is that if we cure one of those diseases, then chances are we're going to be able to cure many other neurological diseases that are linked to that. So I'm just going to take, I have to turn around here to see where my producer is, see if we've got hold of anybody on the phone yet. And do we have somebody on the phone? Okay. All right. Well, he's giving me the break signal. So we're going to take a quick break and I'll find out what's happening and we will be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Designing Health, makers of Missing Link, we cover the world of animals. This week, August 16th, it's a best Sunday with Dr. Nels Rasmussen. We'll have open phone lines, and Dr. Nels can help with emotional, behavioral, or physical problems. He can test for allergies, drug, or supplement compatibility and dosages for you or your animal friends. Call us for a free remote session. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Keep it simple, find the joy, and get back to playing with your kids and grandkids. Early childhood educator Ann Gadzikowski joins Vicki to say it's good to create a beautiful mess with your children and grandchildren. She'll share how to foster a balanced childhood with plenty of running, building, creating, cuddling, tinkering, and pretending. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Come as you are. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. We're pleased to have located Dr. Fiona Gupta. She's joining us right now. She's the medical director of the Deep Brain Stimulation Program at the Movement Disorders Center at Hackensack University Medical Center. And Dr. Gupta is heavily involved with Parkinson's disease research. She's lectured and presented abstracts at the major Neurology Academy meetings and is currently the principal investigator of clinical trials in movement disorders, which is being conducted. The trials are being conducted at the medical center. So, Dr. Gupta, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
So I told our listeners that there was an interesting study came out that said depressed people may be at risk for Parkinson's disease. So tell us the findings of the study.
Sure, this is very interesting, and we're learning more and more about the different symptoms that go along with Parkinson's disease. I think one thing that's very important to preface is that there's no two people that are alike with Parkinson's. Everyone is very different, and some people have more what we call motor symptoms, which are things like shaking and stiffness and gait disorders, and other people have more what we call non-motor symptoms, including depression, which can be a big one. What's very interesting with depression, though, is we are learning that it is now considered a pre-motor symptom. So even 5 to 10 years prior to someone being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, depression might manifest as one of the earliest signs. And we're learning this is really because of ongoing loss of a chemical called dopamine in the brain that, you know, often is relatively silent until enough is lost to where patients then develop signs of Parkinson's. But a big premotor symptom is depression. And this is where I think, you know, much of the focus is really to really dice out different mood disorders in each patient and treat them accordingly.
And so, to put this in perspective, on this study, were they twice as likely to get? I mean, what were the numbers there? I do have them here, but I don't want to read them out per se because I've just got a list of numbers here. But I think it was 2.5 times higher the risk in people who've suffered depression, something like that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Again, being a big premotor symptom, the risk of having something like depression, but along with other premotor symptoms, including anxiety, almost a twofold higher chance of patients then going on to develop Parkinson's. So not all patients that have depression are going to go on to develop Parkinson's.
Right.
But if there is enough symptoms, and this is more than just depression, then there is a much higher percentage. And the other premotor symptoms, just to be thorough, is depression, anxiety, constipation, and also something which is a huge predictor is something called REM behavioral disorder. And what this is when patients, when they're dreaming, you know, during REM sleep, that's when we have our deepest dreams, rapid eye movement sleep, and typically our bodies are paralyzed. The only thing that's moving are our eyes, hence the name rapid eye movement sleep. In Parkinson's, very early on, the ability for the body to become paralyzed during dreaming is affected, and therefore people yell in their sleep, and they thrash out in their sleep, and they have wild, vivid dreams. And this is probably one of the strongest predictor of going on to develop Parkinson's. So not depression alone, but really this constellation of symptoms, patients have about a twofold higher chance of developing Parkinson's disease.
That's interesting. I'd not heard about the sleep being an indicator before. So let's look at some of the symptoms because, as I've said, there's so many myths out there. It's not all about having a tremor. It's not all about the shaking diseases. A lot of people just like to put it off. I mean, it's a very debilitating disease. So tell us some of the symptoms that we might find.
Sure. And remember, again, no two people are alike, and there's probably hundreds of different symptoms that we can discuss.
Right.
There's about 1 million patients with Parkinson's in the U.S., but I think the reason why awareness is so important, such as a program like this, is because in the next 10 years, that number is going to actually double. So we all know someone with Parkinson's now. Think about it in the next, 10 to 15 years, it's going to be more and more patients affected. And symptoms are vary. Some patients are more prominent in what we call movement disorders. This is shaking or tremors. Slowness of gait, a stooped posture, shuffling when they walk. Speech and swallowing disturbances can also be part of it. And then there's a whole constellation called non-motor symptoms. Again, depression, anxiety being big ones, sleep disturbances, issues with slowing of thinking. People just, have difficulty with processing and processing speed. And then, other symptoms that can be affected, like lightheadedness, dizziness, blood pressure changes, and so on. So I think it is important to realize it's a head-to-toe disorder. Every single patient is different. And again, it's more than just shaking. People always equate Parkinson's with having tremors, and it's so much more than that.
Yeah. In fact, I know with my mom, and as you've pointed out, and we should point this out again, the symptoms are different in people across the board. But with my mom, it was the medication that made her shake and tremble and throw her arms all over the place. When she was off the medication, she could hardly move at all.
Exactly.
So I had a couple of listeners who have Parkinson's disease and asked to get this answered from you because they've both been given different answers, and that is this genetic? If they've got Parkinson's disease, are they passing it on? And does that mean that their kids are going to inherit this disease?
Sure, that's an excellent question. So, true genetic Parkinson's disease is fortunately quite rare. So it's probably less than 5% of all cases of Parkinson's that are accounted for are purely genetic. And typical genetic Parkinson's starts usually younger, so patients who might be in their 30s and 40s. And so it's a different type of Parkinson's. So, purely genetic Parkinson's where, it keeps getting passed on is rare. However, although we're still uncertain about what causes Parkinson's, we do think it's kind of a combination between maybe having some genetic predisposition, so maybe being susceptible to developing Parkinson's, through genetics, and then something in the environment comes along and kind of accelerates the disease into play. So, whether it's environmental factors that have been studied, like pesticides or herbicides or, different kind of chemicals in the environment, it's probably what we call a two-hit sort of theory, where patients might be predisposed genetically. Some will never develop Parkinson's. Others who might be predisposed, something in the environment comes along and starts it. But purely genetic Parkinson's, where it gets passed on generation to generation, is quite rare and usually starts very early on.
Right. So if somebody thinks they have the symptoms of Parkinson's, or they're feeling this, they really need to see a specialist at some point, right?
I think so, for sure. I mean, a neurologist will always sort of be a major player for all patients with Parkinson's. But in this day and age, it's more than just a neurologist. I am a movement disorder neurologist, so I'm a neurologist but did more training in movement disorders, particularly Parkinson's. And I think with all there is to know right now about the different symptoms of Parkinson's, the different treatments, and then, you know, the whole future in terms of therapies for Parkinson's, if patients can get to a movement disorder specialist, I would highly advocate that.
Right. You know, one thing I found out, and I want to stress in the segment here, is when my mother went into hospital several times for respite or for various other things unrelated to Parkinson's, that there was nobody in that hospital who knew anything about Parkinson's. And so they need either a very strong family advocate with them, or they need some kind of, I don't know, are there specialists, nurses here who deal in Parkinson's?
Exactly. Well, that's a terrific point. To really live well with Parkinson's and to beat Parkinson's, you have to be your own advocate, but you have to have advocates around you. And one of the big pushes in the community is really on education. And it's amazing how many patients go in the hospital and actually get worse with Parkinson's, because with Parkinson's, it's important that medications are given on time and patients are mobile and they're active and, you know, they're trying to really resume activity. So oftentimes when they're in the hospital, it declines. At our center, we have a big push to really educate and make sure patients are well taken care of, but it all starts with being an advocate for yourself and having good advocates around you. It's a very important, and that's really through education as well.
Yeah. Now, I think when Michael Fox came out to say that he had Parkinson's disease, and he had, I believe, some form of deep brain stimulation with something implanted in his brain, I wonder if you'd talk about those kind of options and what's available to us.
Right. So I do not think he's had a deep brain stimulator. He might have had, you know, another type of operation prior to a deep brain stimulation. But in terms of an actual stimulator, I believe he has not had that. But deep brain stimulation is a wonderful therapy in the right patient. So it's basically using a pacemaker for the brain. And the goal with deep brain stimulation is to help keep a patient on, which is when they take their Parkinson's meds, the dopamine therapy, and they feel very well. But it's to help to be more continuous, almost 7 to 8 hours of good on time a day, where patients then are not going off and on and off and on. It is a surgical intervention. It is not for everyone. But definitely all patients with Parkinson's should be aware of deep brain stimulation as an option, and if it's right for them.
Right. What kind of risks are involved in that? You know, anytime we touch the brain, obviously it's a scary thought.
Sure. So, I mean, what's interesting about deep brain stimulator, it's all done. The whole procedure is done through a hole the size of a dime. So it falls into a category called functional neurosurgery. And again, this is really microscopic surgery in which the surgeon is putting in a small lead, it's the size of a piece of hair, into the target area of the brain, which is responsible for sort of the abnormalities in Parkinson's disease. So it's all done through a hole the size of a dime, and it's quite safe in regards to, you know, major blood loss and things like that. A patient should go to a center that does a lot of these. You know, obviously, the more experienced the team is, the better the outcomes are going to be. Because there is hardware and it involves a pacemaker, you know, plus a brain lead or leads, you know, infection could be an issue, or sometimes bleeding in the brain, whether it's, you know, even a microscopic bleed can occur. But these are usually side effects that are very, very, very rare, less than 5%. And at a center that does a lot of these, you know, you really don't see much of those side effects.
Right. So I wonder if you could explain, while we're talking about the brain, a little about why Parkinson's affects people, how it affects the brain, what stopped happening there, and, you know, to result in this Parkinson's disease.
Exactly. So we all make a chemical, it's a neurotransmitter in our brain called dopamine. We all make that. And dopamine helps us move, and it helps us control how we move and the speed of movement. And also helps us control our emotions and how we feel. It's a very important transmitter. What happens in the brain of Parkinson's disease is that the cells that make dopamine, the neurons that make dopamine, essentially start to degenerate. And for whatever reason, whether it's environmental or genetic or some sort of dysfunction to these neurons, they tend to die out, and more of them start to degenerate, and more dopamine gets lost because these cells are not producing dopamine. And essentially, when enough of these are not present, that's what accounts for the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. And this is why it's considered a neurodegenerative disease, is because throughout the course of the disease, you continue to have cell destruction, unfortunately. But the hallmark really is trying to replace this dopamine as best as we can to, you know, give patients a better quality of life and better movement and better thought processing and so on. So there's a lot of treatment options that exist, but the hallmark really is that transmitter called dopamine.
Right. And it's important, I think, to set benchmarks periodically with your loved ones if they've got Parkinson's, because things can happen so gradually that you don't realize they're deteriorating. Mm-hmm. So what advice do you give to patients about that?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I think communication is absolutely vital. So communication with your loved ones, but communication with your physician and your team. It's really the way to beat Parkinson's disease. I advocate to all my patients prior to their appointments, you know, being comprehensive, writing down a list of things that are really bothersome to them. Pick a couple symptoms that they really want to address. Making sure, you know, diaries are a wonderful way of really kind of figuring out, you know, how patients are doing visit to visit and on a day-to-day basis. And then also, you know, a big part of it is using the community, you know, exercise classes and, you know, different types of therapy and things like that are a great way just to kind of keep measuring progress and meeting others. So, you know, all of these tools can be used, but communication is vital.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything we can do? We talked about some of the things that may contribute, you know, pesticides being one of them. But, I mean, is there something you can do to try and avoid it? That's a big question, and I'm guessing the answer's going
to
be
no. To try to avoid developing Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's nothing, you know, no one factor that really has been shown that if you do, you can avoid Parkinson's disease. There was an interesting study that showed, it was a study that was retrospective that kind of looked at lots of patients and followed them out to see what they developed and what they didn't. And what was interesting is those that drank a lot of coffee, you know, had caffeine, and even those who smoked had a lower chance of developing Parkinson's disease. But we don't advocate to our patients to, you know, start smoking or drinking lots of coffee. But that I thought was interesting in terms of, like, potentially protective factors, caffeine and nicotine. But I will say that exercise is definitely modifying. So I think it plays a huge role in terms of staving off Parkinson's, someone who might be susceptible, you know, may never get it if they're really avid exercisers. But also, if a patient is diagnosed with Parkinson's, more importantly than anything else they can do is really exercise, because it is the only thing that has been shown to slow the progression of the disease. So I'm a big believer in exercise, and I think that, you know, whether you have Parkinson's, you should exercise, and even if you don't, there is a chance that this could either delay the onset or prevent it from happening.
Yeah, they've done some interesting studies up here, because there's a big Parkinson's group up here, and interesting studies on music and how that affects people, and stationary bicycles in particular were helping people get their rhythm mm-hmm. going. So, yeah. So let's look at this other study that I heard about from you, and that is that sleeping on your side may reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a very preliminary study. This was, I believe, done in the animal population in mice, and it just showed that this might accelerate a pathway called the glymphatic pathway that removes toxins in the brain that might account for, you know, the development of Alzheimer's disease. So still very early on, but I think it is very important in terms of, you know, further study, and potentially, you know, that sleeping on your side might be the best position, better than definite stomach sleepers or even on the back. So a lot of work to be done, but I think, you know, more progress, the better in this area.
Okay. Well, Dr. Fiona Gupta, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your time today and expertise on Parkinson's disease.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And we are taking a quick break. We'll be right back. If you're up here in the Seattle area, check out nwpf.org. National Parkinson, the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation up here. They're very, very active in the community. We'll be right back.
Awee,
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Keep it simple, find the joy, and get back to playing with your kids and grandkids. Early childhood educator Ann Gadzikowski joins Vicky to say it's good to create a beautiful mess with your children and grandchildren. She'll share how to foster a balanced childhood with plenty of running, building, creating, cuddling, tinkering, and pretending. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
Tell your friends the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we're talking with someone now who has what I describe as a pretty exciting job. His name is Boone Smith. He's part of National Geographic Wild's lineup for World Lion Day, which just happens to be today. Boone Smith's a big cat wrangler. He's spent 20 years catching a total of nearly 500 cougars and pumas in Chile and across America. We'll find out why in just a moment. He's a fourth-generation tracker and handsman raised on a cattle ranch in southeast Idaho and has used his expertise to gather data on big cats, their behavior and their landscape to help scientists with conservation studies. Boone Smith, welcome. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vicky.
Well, this is exciting. National Geographic has this special going today. They've declared it World Lion Day. So tell us a little bit about it, Boone, and how you're involved in this.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously we've had, lions have been in the news a lot lately, and kind of a lot of the news has been a little bit negative. And so the spin that we've taken here with Nat Geo Wild is we wanted to create an awareness campaign and highlight some of the incredible things that these animals do, some of their life histories, what they're all about, and why they're important to us as a society. So we've got World Lion Day today. Throughout the day on Nat Geo Wild, it's nothing but lions. Some of the very best wildlife film documentaries on lions that are out there. So if you want to see lions doing what they do and some of their complexities in life, you can check it out today. And the other thing is we want to get an awareness campaign out there for folks so they know how they can also join in and participate and help out the cause and help get research programs that are grassroots research programs on the ground, how they can help out with those, and we can continue to manage these species for the better.
Right. So here's the big question that I get asked, and I'd like to hear how you answer it, because I quite honestly don't know how to answer it other than, you know, how could you not care? But when people, have you had people say to you, you know, why should I care? Because that's been a question for me. I remember once I was working on a documentary film about nothing to do with big cats, but, you know, the feedback I got from a couple of people was, well, why should I care? It doesn't affect me. And I think there is this perception with some people. I know there was a huge outcry when Cecil the lion was killed by the U.S. guy. But how do you answer that question?
You know, there's a couple of reasons that I answer to people. The first is the biology answer. Biologically speaking, when we have big apex predators like these big cats, when their populations are in balance, it seems like everything else underneath them kind of balances out as well. So we can assess the health of an environment, an ecosystem, simply by looking at the big carnivores. And so we want there, because when they're not there, they're out of balance, and everything else kind of goes funky, out of whack. And we have, and it trickles all the way down to the landscape, the flowers, the birds, the fish, everything else. The other reason, which is equally important, I feel, is more of a wildness sense. So when we have big animals, big predators, they require big space. Big space means we have big wilderness areas, which are great. And whether we watch them on TV on a dock or we go there ourselves and experience it, I think it's important for us to be able to reconnect, to go back where, be in a spot or understand a situation where we're not number one anymore, where we have to rely on our senses, where there is no cell phone, there is no internet that we just, you know, blink of an eye have things. And I think that helps us reconnect, and it's literally like a spiritual thing, I think. I think we have to reconnect mm-hmm. with the wild and our roots and where we came from. And I think that's good for everybody. Everybody needs to be able to take time out and kind of reflect about what it really is all about. And I think if we don't get that and we say, well, I don't care about that, I think we're missing a really big piece of the picture right there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So I think National Geographic is and always has been for me the gold standard of wildlife programming. They put on some superb programs, and this is going to be no different. Some of the things they've got lined up today, the Lion Battle Zone, Lion Gangland, Fight for Life when the Lion Pride takes over. I mean, there's some really exciting things on there. But I'm wondering what pushes you out. You're a fourth generation cat tracker. What pushes you out to wrangle big cats?
You know, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, obviously, the first and foremost reason is when we're involved in conservation and management. I feel like the things I do help make a difference. You know, I think at the end of the day, everybody wants to feel like they made a difference or they're doing good things. And then there's all the bonus things that come with it. I'm in the outdoors all the time. I'm around big predators, you know, and I'm seeing all the wildlife and the wild places and the adventure. And I mean, there's all those other bonuses that come along with it. But at the end of the day, I think it's, you know, I want my kids to be able to go places and see lions and tigers and not necessarily know that they have to go to a zoo to see one. If they want to go out and disappear into the wilderness and spend some days and go on a trek, that they can go out and experience Mother Nature in its purest form. And I think that's something that everyone needs to experience at some point in their life.
Yeah. So I understand that National Geographic is going to be running some PSAs telling us how we can help. I know that one of the things, ways we can support the National Geographic Society's efforts to protect big cats is by promoting the hashtag 5 for Big Cats, if we're on Twitter, hashtag 5 for Big Cats. What are a couple of other ways that you're aware of we can help?
Yeah, this is what I love about Nat Geo Wild and National Geographic is is they put their money where their mouth is, for lack of a better term.
Right.
So the hashtag, the Fight for Big Cats, the Big Cats Initiative, which is a worldwide effort there. I mean, I think there was almost 40 different projects that they contribute money to, and it all goes right into research. So it's the GPS collars that we need to track animals. It's the day-to-day needs that a field researcher and biologist has. It's educational programs in Africa, the how to build a boma, to teach people how to have better husbandry practices to protect their livestock so there's not conflict. Everything goes into on-the-ground stuff. And so between, you know, like say the hashtag Fight for Big Cats, the Big Cats Initiative, the Cosmephora program, you can find them on all their websites. And that's what's so great about it, is they don't talk about it. They are doing something to make a difference.
They are. And their programming, as I said, I mean, I really do think it's the gold standard. You must be proud of the work you're doing. And a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
You know, I think the thought that everybody, we always think too often, is someone's going to do something about it. And certainly there are people doing things about it, but I think get involved. Be aware of what's going on. It's our world. We're responsible for it. Take advantage, whether it's to donate $5 or to go volunteer on a program somewhere or get a job and do it. There's so many ways that we as humans, as individuals, can make a difference, and each step matters.
Yeah, and I think one of the best ways is to get our kids involved. I'm wondering how you involve. Do you have children right now? And if so, how do you involve them?
You know, my boy turns 10 this September, and we've already taken him out. He radio collared a couple mountain lions with me last winter. He tracks with me. I mean, we expose him to the outdoors and explain to him why things work the way they do. I do a lot of presentations at schools, and that's probably my favorite thing I do, is actually just going to the schools and talking to the kids, especially when we get to, you know, big city stuff, about what's out there.
Yeah,
and you know what they can go and experience, and it's so cool talking to kids, and they're fired up about it, and they want to go out and save the world, which is what we want to instill in them. So that's probably one of my favorite things, is giving those presentations, programs, and letting people know that our world is fascinating, and there's so many things to discover yet, and that they can go be part of it.
Well, Boone Smith, doing great work, and of course National Geographic and Nat Geo Wild doing terrific work too. And don't miss their awareness today. It's World Lion Day today, programming on Nat Geo Wild. Boone Smith, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Vicky. I appreciate it as well.
And we will be right back. Please do stay with us. And don't forget to, when we're over, you can plug into Nat Geo Wild on TV and catch World Lion Day.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Don't touch that dial. You might miss something life-changing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And if you were listening at the top of the hour, you heard me say that my next guests are calling, saying we have a pandemic in micronutrient deficiency, and we're going to find out more about that in a moment. Celebrity nutritionist Jason B. Carlton, PhD, and Mira Carlton, CN, are among the world's leading experts in this very subject, in micronutrients and dietary supplement science. They're the authors of Naked Calories, and last time they joined us, they talked about rich food, poor food, They also write a regular nutrition column for the First for Women magazine and have been featured in major media outlets, including the Wall Street Journal, CNN, Fox and Friends, PBS, and Prevention magazine. Their new book is called The Micronutrient Miracle, The 28-Day Plan to Lose Weight, Increase Your Energy, and Reduce Disease. Welcome both.
Thanks for having us, Vicki.
We're so happy to be here.
Well, I'm pleased to have you back. I plowed through this book. I'm like, okay, am I micronutrient deficient? And chances probably, I mean, are good that I am, because you've got some amazing statistics in here that led you to make the claim that, you know, this is a pandemic situation, that we're micronutrient deficiency. So would you give us some of those numbers and tell us, you know, what led you to this conclusion?
Absolutely. Well, we didn't do the math on this one. We actually looked to the U.S. government, and they have USDA statistics, and they actually said that 96% of Americans are currently deficient in at least one micronutrient. And this is really shocking because it's such a huge number, it's hard to get your head around it. If you look at all the people who are currently suffering from cancer, and you put them, which is a horrible disease, and you put them in a room, and then you add to them all the people who have heart disease, and then you add to them all the people who have osteoporosis, and then you add to that all the people with diabetes. If you look at all those people, those four horrible diseases, it is just half of the people that are currently suffering from a deficiency here in the United States. And we keep talking about these other diseases, but no one is talking about the root cause, which is the micronutrient deficiency.
So let's talk about what micronutrient means, because I know a lot of people use micronutrient and phytonutrient interchangeably, and that's not correct, is it?
Well, there's essential, so let's talk about that. So food has two basic components. It has its macronutrients, which are things like carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, and those we need in larger quantities or macro quantities, and those carry the calories. Then there's the micronutrients, and we're talking specifically about essential micronutrients. Those are things like vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, and amino acids. Now, certain phytonutrients are also micronutrients, and they definitely are in that category, but they may not be categorized as essential at this point. So we want to definitely still include a lot of those in the diet, but we're talking specifically about the ones that your body must have in at least minimum quantities each and every day, or we will develop some kind of health condition or disease.
So let's look at what are some of the symptoms that we might be micronutrient deficient? How would we know?
Well, it's things that everyone is probably used to. So if you have stress, stress is actually a symptom that you have micronutrient deficiencies. People who are micronutrient deficient feel much less stress every day. Just naturally, it takes care of that in the body. If you don't sleep well, maybe you have a little bit of brain fog. Maybe your hair isn't very shiny, your skin is bad. Maybe you have poor digestion. There's hormone imbalance. All of these things all have at their roots the same micronutrient deficiencies. The thing is, it's dependent. Your symptoms are dependent on which specific micronutrients you are deficient of in your everyday life.
Right. Now, the two of you have a very interesting love story to share. I wonder if you'd share that with us. I was reading how you met, and Mira, is it Mira or Myra? I'm sorry.
It's Mira.
Mira,
right?
Yeah. So you were not at all well. You were very successful in New York in your PR company, enjoying life, and all of a sudden you find out you've got osteoporosis at a very young age. So tell us what happened and what that led to.
Yeah, well, just like you said, I was enjoying life. I thought everything was fantastic. And then I just got really achy and my bones hurt and my lower back was throbbing, my hips. So I went to see a doctor on my 30th birthday. And even though I thought I had been doing absolutely everything right, having a very healthy diet, and I went to the gym and I didn't know that anything was really wrong with me, what I found out was that my bones had become so frail that I had the bones of an 80-year-old woman. Didn't know what to do about that, but I had to sell my company because I could no longer do my job, and I had to move in with my sister down in Florida, and I started to look for someone who might be able to help me, and I found a doctor of human nutrition who we started looking at these micronutrients, and we put me on a protocol very similar to the one, actually the exact one that we have in the book, and we started working together, and in 2 years, we went to get tested again, and I found out that I had reversed my advanced osteoporosis.
Right.
And then I marry the doctor.
I was going to say, you're missing the most, the key part of the love story here.
You know what? I got two amazing things out of it. Three. First, I got rid of my osteoporosis. Then I got a lovely husband. And now I have a mission. And I have a mission that my husband and I share to make sure that people understand you don't have to get that sick before you do something about it. It's so simple to become sufficient. And you can just do a little bit every single day, and then you don't have to worry about being sick.
Right. So you have a chapter in the book all about micronutrient deficiency specific. You say the first law of nutritional science is that micronutrients are so powerful that being deficient in even one can kill you. And of course, this is the truth. We now have a lot of supplements in our milk and stuff like that. But, you know, sailors from years gone by died of scurvy frequently. There were a lot of illnesses. So it's pretty key to our diet. And talk to us a little bit about that chapter, if you would.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a really interesting thing. I mean, recently, research has now come out linking Alzheimer's disease to a vitamin B1 deficiency. Mm. But over 100 years ago, you had Russian scientists linking micronutrient deficiencies to Alzheimer's as well, or what they called at that time, it was different than Alzheimer's. It was
amnesia.
Here, look at me, I'm having amnesia. So it was amnesia back then. Now it's obviously escalated to Alzheimer's disease in our society, and we're linking it back to that B1 deficiency. And like you said, almost all disease started off in these linked to micronutrient deficiencies, scurvy being one of them, rickets, beriberi, you know, all these different diseases that killed hundreds of thousands of people in the past. And then all of a sudden came in this day and age when we started to say, well, maybe, you know, so virus and bacteria came in. And in fact, they thought that a lot of these diseases were viral and bacterial at the beginning. That's why it took so long for them to kind of figure it out. But now what we're starting to do and we're starting to see, we have that same kind of concept in our society too, don't we? We think lots of times, well, I have this health condition, I have this hypertension, or I have this osteoporosis, or I have this diabetes, and what's going to fix me is going to be some kind of a drug. Mm-hmm. I know that they're going to come up with some kind of drug that's going to just fix me. Well, so far, not so good on that front. But what we have done is we've started to really dig deep down into the root cause of these health conditions, and we're starting to find these micronutrient deficiencies down there, and we're starting to realize that even inflammation, you know, I think is pretty much across the board. All medical and nutritional science agree inflammation equals disease. That's a fact, in at least on our modern nutrition and medicine. What they're finding out just this month, actually, Dr. Bruce N. Ames published a research paper that stated that he took it to the next step and said inflammation is caused by micronutrient deficiency. So we're getting there. We're starting to really kind of turn our thinking around when it comes to these mighty micronutrients.
Right. So you have this 28-day plan, and one of the first things, of course, is purge your pantry. And we all know we shouldn't be eating processed food. We talked about this a lot last time. We all know we shouldn't be eating sugar, whatever it's called. But here's what surprised me. You said there's a table in the book where gluten is hiding. It might be hiding in white pepper, in spice mixes, in some blue cheeses, self-basting turkeys. That was a shocker.
Yeah, no, a lot of people think that it's only in just plain old wheat, like bread. But no, it's everywhere. And it's really amazing. You have to be very, very careful. Luckily, because wheat is one of those foods that is people have allergies, they actually have to put that on the label. So that's actually really, that's at least a bonus for us. If it contains wheat, it has to say contains wheat.
Right, right.
So it's a lot to take care of, a lot to look for. So if you are trying to get rid of the gluten, that's one of the things. We want you to actually look at all these things that we list there, and we want you to check any of them if they aren't gluten-free.
Yeah, and you have a where soy is hiding table, and it's in tea bags?
Yeah.
In tea bags. Isn't that crazy? It's in soy. The ingredient is soy lecithin. So they take that soy lecithin and they stick it in the tea bags, and there it is. Right. So yeah, it's hiding all over the place. Chocolate bars, that's another place that soy lecithin is, and it helps with the mouthfeel of the chocolate. But again, there's other types of lecithin. You could use sunflower lecithin, or you could leave it out altogether.
Right. Interesting. So there's a chapter called Get Out of Your Own Way. We're supposed to have a certain amount of micronutrients every day in our diet. You name a few diets here that are very popular: Atkins for Life, DASH diet, that doctor's been on our show, Practical Paleo, South Beach diet. None of those meet the number of micronutrients that we need to get. So talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, well, we wanted to see, because everyone always said, you know, oh, you just eat a balanced diet, you'll be fine. Just eat a balanced diet. And you hear that over and over again. And so you're like, does the balanced diet really supply it? And we're going to go one step further. What if professionals created the diet plan? People who are smart, people who are doctors, who are nutritionists, people whose goal it is to make you healthy, not just random. So we looked at some of the most popular diet plans. And what we did is we measured every little bit of food out on their menu plans until we would get an idea of how many micronutrients they were really giving us. And what we found was shocking, that on average, they were only 48% sufficient in reaching the RDI, or the recommended daily intake, for all of the micronutrients. And that's just 50% failing.
Mm.
That means that if you think that these guys couldn't do it, then what makes you think that you're randomly choosing things out of your fridge is going to be any better?
Yeah. So we want to look at how we are going to do it. The book is called The Micronutrient Miracle, The 28-Day Plan to Lose Weight, Increase Your Energy, and Reduce Disease. My guests are Dr. Jason Carlton and Mira Carlton. And one of the things I want to look at very quickly, because this is in the news constantly, GMOs, and we're being bullied into believing they're not harmful. What do you have to say about GMOs?
Well, I think this is one of the hottest topics going on right now. There's people on both sides of this coin, right? They're saying GMOs, we need them to feed the world. The other side is, no way, these are completely unnatural, and they're going to cause all kinds of health problems. You know, where you fall in that argument is really irrelevant when it comes to the perspective that we're going to talk about right now, which is the micronutrient perspective. And as you probably noticed, we look at everything through the micronutrient perspective. So GMOs are created in a lab, and basically they can withstand something called glyphosate, otherwise known as Roundup. So these plants are planted and they're sprayed with this Roundup, and that Roundup kills everything except the GMO plant. And it kills the weeds, but it's really about how that glyphosate kills the weed. And it does it by chelating to the minerals in the soil, or not allowing that weed to absorb the minerals it even needs to grow from the soil, and that, which causes a huge micronutrient depletion, which literally kills it. So they're using that micronutrient depletion as a way to kill the weeds. Well, it does the same thing for the plant. Yes, the plant still looks good on the outside. Remember, it was genetically modified to do so. Yes, it still withstands and doesn't die when it's been sprayed with this basic poison, but it is getting less micronutrients from the soil, and that's what science is actually showing definitively. So while it still looks to you and I like normal food, it's just another kind of nail in the coffin, where the food we're eating, even though we're thinking it's fresh, has less of this micronutrients in it, which causes us to have this high caloric diet, very low micronutrient diet, which is kind of the gateway to this disease that we're talking about.
All right. So we only have just over a minute left, unfortunately. A lot of information in this book. It's really terrific. What do I need to do today to start making sure I'm not micronutrient deficiency? What do I have to do?
Well, the first thing I would tell you is to grab a copy of the book, because it's three simple steps. We're going to tell you to eat better. We're going to tell you to supplement smart. We're going to tell you to reduce your habits. But we have a lot more information. The best place to learn about it and to get $200 in gift certificates simply for buying a copy of the book is at mymiraclegifts.com. We're going to send you a whole bunch of information, but everyone who buys a copy actually gets $200 in cash, just like cash gift certificates, to spend to buy the things that you should be eating.
And that website, again, is mymiracledoet.com?
No, mymiraclegifts, plural. Okay. G-I-F-T-S, gifts, mymiraclegifts.com.
Okay, very good. And so as far as myself, if I can't get there today, what do I – give me a tip. Give me a number one top tip.
Well, it's switch to rich. We're always food first people. So it's just learning how to read a label, learning what to choose in every aisle of the grocery store, how to boost your micronutrient levels, and staying away from things like fat, sugar, wheat, and soy. Those are our three things that we knock out first.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a ton of information in this book. I don't know if you can see on the camera, but I've earmarked so many pages on here. There's some really good information in here. And I want to thank Jason Carlton and Mira Carlton for joining us today. Thank you both so much. Appreciate your time.
We appreciate you helping to spread this message. Thanks,
Vicki.
And the book, again, is called The Micronutrient Miracle, The 28-Day Plan to Lose Weight, Increase Your Energy, and Reduce Disease. And it really is full of great information. And I think everything you need to know about micronutrients is in that book. All right, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you spending this hour with us. You can find me at conversationslive.net. You can email me at info@conversationslive.net. Call me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. If you have any feedback on today's show or any questions or you missed anything, I'm happy to send you information. So you can also find us at Facebook, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. So until next week, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Keep it simple, find the joy, and get back to playing with your kids and grandkids. Early childhood educator Ann Gadzikowski joins Vicky to say it's good to create a beautiful mess with your children and grandchildren. She'll share how to foster a balanced childhood with plenty of running, building, creating, cuddling, tinkering, and pretending. Join us every Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.